ministers of government for each financial year. While we begin this important task before us, we are also mindful that the year 2020 has not been easy for our country and the world. And the manner in which things are going, we will be amongst the hardest hit countries by the COVID-19 pandemic economically and otherwise. So it will be important to begin this mammoth task with an open mind, putting our personal interests aside and start engaging with an aim of advancing the interests of the poor and the vulnerable South Africans and those who are at the forefront in fighting the scourge of COVID-19. We also welcome the stimulus package announced by His Excellency President Ramaphosa last night. I think these interventions will go a long way to cushion and sustain the economy, employment, and our vulnerable groups. That's the target. I hope, honorable members, by now, all the technical glitches from members and people who were unable to connect to this meeting have been sorted out, and I'm now going to hand over to the secretariat. Lubabalo, please, can you indicate who is here from the provinces? Just a roll call and apologies if we do have. And while you do that, Lubabalo, please, can you also outline the house rules?
Okay. Thank you so much, Chairperson. I hope I'm honorable enough. Okay, Chairperson, at this point in time, we have got about 131 people who have attended this meeting. So the way I think is going to assist for me to do a roll call maybe is to go province by province just to check maybe what a chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Finance just to indicate his or her presence. I think probably it might be much easier. And then I'll go to Naldrez and colleagues, FFC and TPO. If that is in order, chairperson, you may please indicate.
Okay, I thought maybe you will start with our stakeholders, the ones that you usually have, and let the members from the provinces indicate on the chat. Then you'll go through the chat, unlike going one by one, because some will be struggling to unmute and all those things. Just go on the chat, then indicate which province is here. Yeah.
Okay, Chair, that is what is going to be tricky, Chair. I don't know if we understand this other. If you can see my screen now, these are all people who have attended. We have got 142. So to pick them one by one is going to be tricky. I thought it was going to be easy if, for example, I say, chairperson, in case you please indicate your attendance, and then the chairperson will indicate present, and then I go to Free State, province by province like that, and then go to National Treasury. Just to kind of shorten the process, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I begin now, Chair. Chairperson from Eastern Cape, may you please indicate if you are present in the meeting? Eastern Cape?
The person was struggling. He was saying he's on the phone. He's listening on the audio.
But he was
still struggling. I talked to him. He's still struggling to connect, but he hears on the audio on the phone.
Okay. Please continue helping him.
From the Eastern Cape, Chairperson.
Okay.
Free State, may you please indicate your presence? Chairperson, Free State.
Good morning, Chair. I'm I'm Honorable Zuzmuz Abdullala, the chairperson of the PROTEC in the Free State. We also have members of the committee in attendance. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable Chabalala. Gauteng, may you please indicate your presence?
The chairperson is struggling to connect because he connected on the wrong meeting notification. I'm a member from Gauteng. I'm here. My name is Julia Machiki.
Is there someone helping him?
I am communicating with him offline.
Okay. Thank you.
KZN, may you please indicate your presence?
KZN is here.
Thank both the chairperson of KwaZulu-Natal Finance Portfolio Committee and other members are present.
Thank you,
Chairperson Ngosi. Chairperson Limbombo, can you please indicate your presence?
Limbombo? Limpopo, is there anyone from Limpopo?
Yes, morning. Morning, my name is Honorable Kibonelwea. The chairperson is still struggling to connect, but we are here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mpumalanga, Chairperson Mpumalanga, can you please indicate your presence?
Thank you, it's Honorable Lakshmi
Sorry, Chairperson, I muted you. Can you please unmute your mic? Sorry
about that. It's Honorable Lakshmi Narain. I'm from Mpumalanga with all the other members of the committee as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. Northern Cape, can you please indicate your presence, Chairperson Northern Cape? North Cap. Chairperson Northern Cape.
Hello, can you hear?
Morning.
I'm Honorable Kate Van Salen. The chairperson, Honorable Mandeng, is still struggling to link, but someone is assisting him.
Okay, thank you. Chairperson Northwest, can you please indicate your presence? Chairperson Northwest. Chairperson Northwest.
Bokone Bophirima. Have the members, except the chairperson, maybe still struggling? Members of the committee, Bokone Bophirima. Northwest, there's no indication.
No indication.
Maybe they're still struggling. Yeah.
Okay, Western Cape, Chairperson Western Cape, may you please indicate your presence?
Good morning, Chair of the Western Cape, Chairperson Deirdre Bartman. I can also see there are 9 other members from the Western Cape present, but I will list their names on the chat as well. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That's all with respect to COVID, Mr. Chairperson. Now I'm going to move to the guest chair. I'm going to start with National Treasury. National Treasury colleagues, can you please indicate your presence?
Madam, the leader of the team.
National Treasury.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. and the honourable members of Chair.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, did you say?
Good morning. So we are here.
Morning.
Okay, morning.
Okay.
I am with Wendy Spanner and Stephen Kenyon is also on the line. As you know, they are the key team that crosses the Division of Revenue. And we also have, I hope, Ms. Harakwi, who is responsible for the provincial budget oversight, and also Ms. Rupla and Mr. Mashaba, who are coming from the local government budget. I thought we could have a bigger team that can enable the discussion, and I think the yes. So I don't know if there's anybody else I've left from National Treasury.
No problem. Thank you. We'll make those decisions.
Thank you so much. This is FFC Prof. Can you please indicate your presence?
Good morning, honourable chairperson and honourable members. My name is Daniel Portis. I'm the chairperson of Finance and Fiscal Commission. With me, I've got Commissioner Fowler and Commissioner Mukadi, the CEO of the FFC, Dr. Kay Brown, and the star was going to present with me is Dr. Nube and Mr. John Kruger, and there was also other research and other staff in the meeting, which you will call on depending on what where the conversation is going into. Thank you.
Thank you,
thank you so much, Prof.
Colleague from PBO, can you kindly please indicate your presence?
Good morning, sir, and all members. Thank you so much. My name is Alexander Santil. I'm with my colleague, Nini Alangi, and Plus Mohammed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Doc. Doc, in terms of stakeholders, I think that's all. Maybe we can just double check again if Northwest is concerned. Because as we the numbers have increased, now we've got 154 attendants. Northwest,
okay.
Can you indicate if you have joined us? Chairperson Northwest?
Or any member?
Or any member from Northwest?
Legislator? No one yet.
So far, no one, Chairperson.
Yolanda, can Yolanda communicate with them and assist? Find out.
Okay, we'll make a plan, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
If I may, since you also gave me a task of explaining the meeting rules.
Before then,
okay.
The members of the committee.
Oh,
we have apologies.
Oh, oh.
Who is here?
No, Chairperson, I did not receive an apology except to indicate that Mr. Mkiva, I've been in contact with him. He's in the investigation areas. His network, his signal is poor, Chairperson. So he indicated that he wanted to join us. So he said he will try and go to town and see if he can find a quiet place and join us. But what we did, we also invited Honorable with an Indian delegate to join the meeting. So I don't know whether she has joined us, but I can do a call for members. Let me start with Mama Rasaire. Can you please indicate your presence?
Honorable Mama Rahani.
Creation. Because Tinasas Meme, Ilokuzana, Commissioner.
Can you mute your mic? The 10 before? Can you mute your mic, please? Yes, go on, Rabalu.
Okay. Mr. Ryder, can you please indicate your presence?
Yes, good morning, everybody. I'm here present and hopefully correct.
Okay.
And not what?
I said, and hopefully correct, Jane.
You are correct.
Okay. Mama Rakhane, can you please indicate your presence? I see you are in the meeting. Can you please indicate your presence? Honorable Mama Rakhane. Honorable Mama Rakhane. Okay, I will come back to Mama Rakhane, Chair. Mr. Okam, can you please kindly indicate your presence?
Good morning, Sam. Yes, good morning to everybody. We have a good meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Njaju, can you kindly indicate your presence, sir? Mr. Njaju?
Hi, Lubabalo, Mr. Njaju. He's still having some challenges with connectivity, so I've been trying to assist him on the site. Ne?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ndongo.
Yeah, but he might join us soon.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ndongo. Mr. Modisane, can you kindly please indicate your presence?
Everyone, yes, Daniel Balalo, I'm available, I'm here. Thank you very much.
Okay, sure. Okay, thank you, Mr. Modisane. Honorable Minister, can you kindly indicate your presence if you have joined us? Honorable Minister, can you kindly indicate your presence if you have joined us? Okay, I'll check you as present, citizen. There's no need to check you again. Who am I forgetting? So the members that are still tracking, citizen, is Mr.
Lubabalo. It's Yunus.
How can I forget you?
Citizen? I don't want to be distracted.
Yeah.
How can I forget you, sir?
Very easily. Thank you. Bye.
Now, it's the pleasure of this meeting. Hey, it's one of the biggest we've ever organized.
Now, with him, it's given. You don't have to do that. Hello?
Hello?
The toy is also present.
Honorable Tutoy, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Honorable Tutoy. So, Chairperson, Apologies, Honorable Tutoy. Chairperson, members that I'm still struggling with now, it's Mama Rakhane, let me check that. Mama Rakhane, can you kindly indicate your presence? She is here, Chairperson. There she is, but I don't know whether it's the mic. Please unmute your mic, Mama.
Hello. Hello. Okay.
Is that Mama Rakhane?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Oh, thank you, sir.
Not once again. No, I understand there's someone on the line.
No.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
Northwest. For Northwest, my name is Kim Midupi. I'm the honorable member from the Northwest.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, honorable Midupi.
Thank you.
Oh,
technology.
Yes, sir. Over to you, sir.
Okay, the rules. The house rules.
Okay, if I may go to house rules, citizen, thank you so much. Honorable and colleagues, we have got a few house rules that we need to observe because of the system. The first issue that we need to observe is to make sure that we all mute our microphones and the only microphone that must be on, it must be the microphone of the speaker. You will only unmute your microphone when you have been recognized by the chairperson and given a platform to speak. The second issue that I would like to highlight is that on the screen, there are only four people that appear at a time. However, it depends as to who is speaking. If you speak automatically, you appear on the screen, and the last fourth person who was on the screen will kind of, the first person who has spoken on the screen will disappear, so the screen kind of rotates. Another issue is that if you wish to save your data, you have got an option of switching off your camera and only listen to the conversation, and the screen will be visible to you, so they probably might decide that there's no need for you to see yourself. You can switch off your camera and save your data if you want to. And also it assists in terms of improving the connectivity. Like I have done now. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to share my screen. All the presentations are going to be visible. I'm going to run a presentation from this side, and colleagues, invited guests in fact, they will do the actual presentation, so I will assist them in terms of running the presentations.
Mr. Nadada.
Yes,
Mr. Before you go there, just one of the things that I think you were going to mention to try and improve the connectivity for members is that members should not use their cell phone or take cell phone calls while we are on the line, because it distracts the network and it kicks the connectivity of this thing out, and they have to rejoin again time and again. So you can use the cell phone away from the system. Thank you.
Thank you. Lebabalo,
okay,
are you still on the floor?
I'm still on the floor, Chairperson. I'm still on the floor.
Okay.
Another issue that I would like to indicate is how members will indicate if they want to speak. So right now I'm going to share my screen. I hope my screen is visible. There are these icons here that appear here on your screen.
Excuse me. Not yet visible.
So, and members, when they want to ask questions, they will
not
click
yet visible
here on this iPhone. It's a meeting
link
linked to this one here, if you can see my...
Lupapalo, your screen is not visible.
Oh, it's not yet visible.
Yeah,
then.
Maybe
okay,
just direct members to the meeting chat. They must go to the meeting chat.
My screen is visible.
Yeah, there's a chat. It's not yet visible. Honorable members, this is important because we will not be able to allow everybody to come in as and when you want to speak and scream, chairperson for my attention. It will be chaotic. So it's very important that we take you through how you will raise your hand or log in for me to be able to acknowledge you or recognize you. It's not yet visible, Lebabalo. Lebabalo is not yet visible. Members, if you can check on your gadget. Okay. Are you back?
Okay,
unmute.
Do it again, sir.
Okay, if you can check on top of your screen or at the bottom, there's a chat icon. Can you see it, members? And then once you click there, it's going to show you all the messages there. So while the presentation is going on, you just write your name and the province, if you come from the province. Then when question time comes, I'll just go there and see the list of the people who indicated that they want to talk. So will the members of the committee. Okay, I think it's coming. Lumbabalo, yeah. Still struggling, Chair.
Yeah. Yes, Chair.
Mm-hmm.
My signal is poor this side, just as in the system, each and every time when I try to share my screen, the system keeps on deactivating it, but is it visible now, Chair, because I can see you now. Can you see my
screen?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I can see the chat on the bottom. Oh, it's gone. I can see you. We can see you.
Lulu, it's Ravi. I'm sharing my screen just to assist you. I will take it off as soon as you're done with your presentation. So you can take the members through while I share my screen.
Okay. Oh, it's gone again.
Hi, Ravi. You are breaking. Hello, Ravi. I missed what you were saying. My connection was to the side.
Sorry, I'm sharing my screen to assist you. So you can speak through it, and I'll share my screen. Okay.
Yeah, just take the cursor there on there. Okay.
Okay.
Take the cursor there.
So that's the conversation.
This
screen.
Is the.
This is the conversation screen. If you need to see what's happening on the chat, which will appear on the right-hand side of your screen, you simply find right at the bottom of the screen the option for you to place your cursor and then type in
or on the bottom. It depends. Sometimes it's on the top.
Yes. So normally it's right at the bottom of the screen. And of course, you can follow the conversations if you scroll up and down the chat window. All of the previous chats will be available. I hope that assists. Is that helpful?
Okay. Thanks. Thank you, Rabbi. You heard what Rabbi said. We check members if understand.
And just let me know when I should stop sharing my screen.
Okay, just keep it there for now. Honorable members from the provinces, I know members of the committee who have taken them through the first process. You understand how you are going to look in members from the provinces. Anyone who doesn't understand can just indicate.
Understand,
can you see? Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. So we don't expect the screaming, the talking, and the golden rule, please keep your mic muted. You only unmute when you are to speak. Thank you so much for your cooperation. Thank you. Nobamalo, can you go back to that?
Thank you, Ravi, for assisting me on this part.
All right, I'm going to sharing off. Thank you, you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
The screen is back to you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you so much, Ravi. Another issue that I would like to indicate is that I also have borrowed powers to mute everyone else, if I may show the screen. I'm not sure if it's going to be possible to share my screen now. So I've got a mute button here. That's where I can mute everyone, but it's advisable that we all mute our microphones on our own. Quickly, Chairperson, I've indicated the issue of assisting colleagues to run the screens. I think Chairperson, that's all. Let me not waste any time. Let me hand it over to you to run the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Lubabalo. members who are able to do the recording of the session, you can record the session while we are in the process. That will also assist. You can do that. Having taken you through the process of members, I think this will help us to run the meetings smoothly. Once more, apologies for those who are still struggling. They will join us, they'll find us on the way. I'm now going to take this opportunity and hand over to National Treasury to make a presentation. And National Treasury, we have indicated in our invitation that we are giving you 15 minutes maximum for the presentation. Thank you. Lebabalu will be assisting you in terms of the of showing of your presentation. You'll speak to the presentation and members will note and whatever they want to, if they come to a point that they want to raise, they will then go to the chat. Thank you. Treasury, Madam?
Thank you, Chair. 15 minutes seems very short, but anyway, we will manage. So what we are presenting to you today is a summary of detailed information that was provided with the tabling of the Division of Revenue Bill and Chapter 6 of the Budget Review and the annexures. So obviously the budget that was tabled in February was tabled under very different conditions as the Chairman have outlined relative to where we are now with the outbreak of COVID and the downgrade of our economy. So this has had a serious impact in terms of economic growth and also fiscal outlook. And with the measures that the president has outlined yesterday, they do reflect that there's going to be a major changes that on the fiscal framework and therefore on the division of revenue. So what is happening now is that the Minister of Finance is in conversation with the chairperson and the Speaker of Parliament in looking at the options that we have in order to be able to get a budget that responds to COVID-19. So at the moment, as you had yesterday, we have got to look at the adjusted budget that will take into account the massive measures that the president has announced. So the options could include that we fast track this budget as is, which is where we are now in terms of what we are talking to you about, presenting to you about the budget, so that it can then enable us to pass adjustment budget. It can also enable us to do the special budget. But special appropriation. However, what is important is the time that it will take to pass this appropriation and the budget and the division of revenue. That will be quite critical. So we are talking to you now on the basis of the current the budget that was tabled, as I've indicated. So if I may go through and run quickly on some of the areas of the budget. So obviously the first slide really reflects that even before the pandemic, we already had a problem in terms of our economic outlook. So we already expected, a less than 1% growth, and we already under-collected, and already were meant to make sure that we can sustain spending in order to prevent and or to hold fiscal consolidation. So So as a first step in terms of the budget of 2020, that was tabled in February, we had to cut spending, net spending cut for around 156 billion. And that was made up of the 261 billion spending, out of which we envisaged that part of it will come from the wage bill of about 160 billion. And the reallocation, most of which went to ESCOM in ESCOM, amounted to 111. So the rest of it was meant to support the fiscal framework as part of fiscal consolidation. So the cuts that were made, the provinces and local government also had to contribute towards the 261 billion that we indicated. However, we cut the budget in such a manner that we protected your health and basic education and free basic services. So the major cuts were obviously with conditional grants. So what the slide number reflects is the digital revenue. Essentially what it reflects is, although the national spending grew by less than inflation, but the provincial...
Just a bit, madam.
Yes.
Are you not too fast or slow for Lobalo? Are you online? The slide on the screen, is it the line that she's speaking to? Is it the slide she's speaking to?
No, I'm not. I'm slide number six now. I'm trying to fly because it's in me.
Okay. Go to six, Lobalo.
Yes.
So
the national budget national department in aggregate grew by less than 3% on average, but the provinces, allocations and local government grew by more than inflation. So I think that is the important point to notice, and that even at that point we already had a debt service cost outpacing all other costs, and because of the SOEs, the share of national increased in the process. Next slide. So the next slide, which is slide number seven, shows in the manner in which we also reduced spending, we still make sure that we are providing for. So what it reflects is that the operational cost of social services for provinces and basic services are almost protected and they remain the same over the years since 2015, 13, 14 in terms of per capita income. So I think this reflects that even under those conditions, there was still an effort to actually protect provinces and local government. So the little cut that in provinces was 7.3 billion from and some technical adjustments that resulted from lower inflation of 5.2 billion. And the bigger cuts that will affect provinces would be if we are able then to effect the cuts on the wage bill as was envisaged. But for now, the numbers reflect that the growth in their allocations are aligned with inflation and inflation growth. So the next slide is on conditional grants, which reflects...
Sorry, is Mr. Elgam point of order on that?
Yes.
Okay, Wally, Okam.
Thank you.
Honorable Okam.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. I just put my name on the list. There's nothing on the screen, and I saw on the list on the meeting chat that there's a lot of people that complain that they can't see any presentations on the screen. So I don't know where I'm... there's nothing that we can see on the screen, and I think it's futile for the speaker to carry on if we can't follow her. So we can just check up on that, please. Thank you.
Okay. While I attend to that, Honorable Okam, I can see it.
And I've requested, Madam, when you speak, you must indicate on which slide are you. But for the members, the presentation was sent to you. You can open your gadgets and just follow the presentation from your gadgets. While still Lubabalo and the team are still attending to the matter, also check on the chat. You can continue. On which slide are you? It's 8 now, ne?
Madam? Yes, it's slide by 8. It's slide 8 that shows the cuts in conditional grants. That even though there has been much deeper cuts in conditional grants, but they have almost maintained the same level of allocations compared to where we were in 2012-18, for instance. But the most important thing on that slide is really to indicate how we make decisions in terms of the cuts that we made, the conditional grants. So the first thing was to look at past spending and performance, and to determine whether the grant was funding salaries and medicines and food, so which would have protect and whether there had been significant growth over the years on that particular grant. And what we also dipping a bit in terms of cuts was on the urban municipalities, which we believe that they have got better capacity to use their own revenue to drive investment in their capacity. Obviously, at the moment, things are changing a bit in terms of the impact of COVID and the economy. So the next slide, which is slide number 9, just shows that the division of revenue is actually highly redistributive, which in a way is reflecting that the tax base, which is in provinces like Gauteng and Western Cape, is very strong. But when we reallocate the provinces with weaker tax rates, but higher demands for services that government provide, are actually receiving more per capita compared to those that have got stronger economic base. And the same thing with municipalities in the metros, the capita per households allocations of what government allocates is lower compared to smaller municipalities, more rural, that depend a lot on the fiscal. So the redistribution elements of it are reflected there. Then the next slide, also, which also responds to the recommendations of the committee with regard to how we ensure consequence management when there is failure to comply with the law. So this one was just showing the work we're doing at time to address the problem of financial distress that municipalities faced, and which originate from failure to have funded budget. So what it shows that is that at the time we had managed to get most of the municipalities to prepare funded budget. So and it's something that we would want to continue to enforce in order to ensure that we don't continue increasing the phenomena of unpaid bills and unsustainability of their finances. So the next slide talks to the issue of responding to the need to develop a pipeline. Part of the performance, given the metros reflected quite underperformance in their spending of the infrastructure grant, is less of culture capacity to prepare projects, particularly the project that will actually involve private sector funding and borrowing. So what we are allowing here for the metro is that one of the grants that is called Integrated Development, that we allow to help them prepare the project so that they are able to develop a pipeline of projects that have financial closure that can actually be attractive investment through the private sector. This links very well with the work that President is also doing in trying to address and increase the pace in which we are investing in infrastructure. So I think that is the few points. So I will allow Wendy or Stephen just to quickly go through the division of revenue clauses and the comments of
okay, thank you.
Good morning, Wendy. Good morning, Chairperson.
Okay.
It's Steve Kenyon here. I'm going to take the next section of the presentation. Good morning, Chair and members.
Just a Stephen, wait a moment. There's a lot of noise that is happening. Somebody, I don't know your identity or what are you doing. I have requested members to mute their phones. Please, I beg of you. Stephen, continue. There's a background sound somewhere. Stephen, you can go on.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Mm-hmm.
I will continue. So I'm going to take members very briefly through from slide 12. Two slides on the clauses of the Division of Revenue Bill, and then three slides each just trying to summarize the provincial and then the local allocations. And then Wendy will give you a brief summary of the responses to recommendations. So the clauses largely remain the same from one year to the next, so there are only sort of relatively small refinements to the clauses. In the 2020 bill, the Built Environment Performance Plans were provided. These are plans that were introduced some years ago for metropolitan municipalities to institutionalize improved planning practices to get them to better integrate their budgeting and planning around spatial transformation objectives. And what we're allowing for here is that once municipalities have institutionalized those better practices in their main planning practices, in their IDPs, in their SDPs, that we then allow them to be exempted from this additional built environment performance plan requirement. So that clause just allows for that exemption now. There's also a provision for the possibility of municipal boundary changes. That's very unlikely to happen in this financial year, but in case the timing of the elections is such that it does take place this financial year, that is provided for. Same provision that we used in 2016 to ensure the ongoing provision of services. Then there are several changes to grant administration. The first provides for the formal creation of different components within a grant. So already we have components within grants. This just kind of formalizes them in the clauses of the Division of Revenue Bill rather than just being something that exists in the framework. We also require national departments when they announce it, when they set a deadline for comments to be submitted. Then on the next slide, slide 13, there are a couple of further administrative changes in the grants for provinces and municipalities. Municipalities must report on remedial actions they've taken when funds are withheld or stopped. There's also a requirement for provinces to consult municipalities before transferring HSDG transfers and the payment schedule there. That's in clause 12. Then there's a requirement that the financial statements of provincial departments include information on conditional grants funds that have been transferred to municipalities, and then also allowing amendments to be made to the payment schedule between provincial departments and municipalities. So these are all kind of technical common sense improvements to that should improve the interactions between provinces and municipalities and national departments as we administer the bill. On slide 14, we provide a summary of the updates to the provincial equitable share formula. So as we highlighted in the medium-term budget policy statement, all of the data that's used in the formula is updated. In addition, there are additional amounts in the formula. Firstly, for sanitary dignity, for expanding that program and extending it over the 2020 MTEF, for HIV awareness and gender-based violence support, and to fund the shift of the social workers from national to provinces. The formula is also under review, and we're working with provincial treasuries, particularly on the education, health, and poverty components. Then on the next slide, we talk to provincial conditional grants. So on slide 15, you will see the the largest single addition in the 2020 Division of Revenue Bill is this 1.4 billion rand that we're adding for the Early Childhood Development Grant, and that will allow provinces to increase the per child per day subsidy from 15 rand last year to 17 rand this year, rising to 18.57 rand per child per day by the outer year of the MTEF, and it will also allow for a small expansion of services. Then on the health conditional grants, and here we're doing all of this in line with the recommendations of your committee on the MTBPS, so two related grants that fund medical internships, community service and training of specialists have been merged into a statutory human resources training and development grant. There are development components in two other conditional grants that assist rural provinces to improve their standards. So that's in the National Tertiary Services Grant and in that Statutory Human Resources Grant. And then there's also a new quality improvement activity in the NHI Indirect Grant. And we've also announced our intention with the Department of Health to review the structure of the overall system of health conditional grants, although obviously that work hasn't started just yet because we're all, especially in the health system, focusing on responding to the immediate needs in the pandemic. And then on the comprehensive agricultural support grant, there was just a small shift of money to the National Department for improved testing and disease control. And then on slide 16, we just provide a table summarizing all of the grants. There are 26 direct conditional grants to provinces and 3 indirect grants, so we haven't had to go through all of the detail here, but all of the detail is in the Division of Revenue Bill. The total amount allocated increases from 107 billion rand last financial year to 123 billion by the end of the MTS period. Then on slide 17, we take you through a summary of the local government equitable share update. So here we are funding a total of 10.4 million households in the 2020 financial year, increasing to 10.8 million by the end of the year. The MTF, we also increased that 435 rand per household per month amount has been increased to take account of rising costs of services, particularly electricity. Then on the next slide, on slide 18, all of these changes to local government grants were announced in the NTDCS, so I take it the committee is aware of them. The informal settlements upgrading components in both the USDG and the HSDG have been extended for one more year. Weight vehicle purchases are allowed in the municipal infrastructure grant. We're seeing consequences in the system. In Steve Twete local municipality, there's a positive consequence. This municipality applied to move from the MIG to the Integrated Urban Development Grant. They met the criteria and have been moved into that grant, which allows a little bit more flexibility for them. While on the public transport network grant, 3 of the cities that have made the least progress in rolling out services have been suspended from that grant. And then there's also an addition of 750 million rand in the regional bulk infrastructure grant for projects to rehabilitate the VAR on the VAR system. Then on slide 19, my last slide, there's just a summary of the local government grants. Here there are 18 direct grants and 5 indirect grants. So again, we're not going through all of them, but the details are all in the bill. And again, the total amount increases from 52 billion rand to 56 billion over the year. And I think Wendy can take you through a brief outline of how we've responded to recommendations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Wendy.
I will be very, very quick. Just to highlight that, as per usual, there's recommendations and there's a number of recommendations that we need to respond to. Some of the recommendations that we need to respond to is related to the FFC, and some of the recommendations that we need to respond to relate to the parliamentary process. And what I'll go through today is the ones that relate to this committee. But as part of the annexures, you'll also see our responses related to the other committees as well. Next slide.
Yes, you can.
Okay, then what the next slide does is it deals with the wasteful expenditure that's taking place, and the committee raised a concern about that and asked that we look at and the ability of departments to spend. And we've looked at the recommendation, and what we will do is, and we have been doing it, and we will strengthen our monitoring with regard to the spending of all transfer funds. And we'll also be providing a progress report on a regular basis. Spending patterns we report on also related to the report we submit to Parliament. Then another recommendation might have to do with the rollover processes and a concern that, you know, the projects must be ready and the point that we make there is that rollovers, the only rollovers that we approve relate to those with funds already committed. And again, we'll provide a progress report to Parliament as need be. Of course, COVID-19 and the lockdown is also creating some problems. Next slide, slide 22. Mm-hmm. And then the committee also made recommendations with regard to ensure that, you know, the backlogs in the sanitation in schools was raised as a serious concern, and that issue needs to receive serious attention. And we're glad to report that in the beginning the program was quite slow to spend, but we're picking up that there's great improvement on the spending patterns on that front. Of course, with COVID-19, most probably some of those gains will again be lost. But as we looked over the years, the spending patterns in terms of the grant has improved quite dramatically, which is a good development. Then the next one has got to do with the debt issue. We've comprehensively dealt with that in Chapter 6. But during question times, Jan Hutting's team is also available to deal with quite a detailed questions on that regard. Then with regard to slide 22, issues were made with regard to infrastructure grants, and this is a repeat of the school infrastructure one. I've already taken you through that one. And then with regard to the data one, so next slide, please, slide 23.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, that looks better. Okay, then with regard to this one, it had to do with the Malotta Rail Corridor, and the issue was dealt with by the Minister of Finance as well, to say that it's an important area of safety, and a lot has been done to improve the quality of the road and the safety of that road. And the tunnel was allocated $4.2 billion through that process. Then another proposal was made with regard to that, and we need to also consider the human settlement and economic development options for that region.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I see there's going to be a lot of questions on that one. And it is an issue that I know is very close to the chairperson as well. But the whole option is just not affordable. Next slide. Slide 24, please. Okay, and then the next one has got to do again with that we need to ensure that provinces and municipalities use the resources at their disposal without wasting it. And we agree with that proposal, and that is why we've also got provisions in the Division of Revenue Act to withhold and stop allocations when we pick up that something is not happening or funds are incorrectly spent. Then with regard to the 9% allocation that goes to local government, it's often a concern raised by SOLGO as well. What the Minister of Finance agreed to at the last budget forum, that is a meeting attended by the Minister together with the MECs of Finance and the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and MECs also attend that meeting. It was agreed that the Lekgotla will be arranged specifically to deal with the local government fiscal framework. It was originally scheduled to take place around end May or around June. Hopefully that date can still be achieved. Slide. Okay, then the next slide deals with reforms to the health grant. It deals with the concerns raised with regard to the merging of health conditional grants. And we need to ensure that when a grant is restructured or terminated or merged, it mustn't impact on service delivery. The changes that we made to the health grants were quite small, and it will definitely not adversely impact on service delivery. But what is quite important is that the National Department of Health has got this habit of changing the health grants every year. And what we will be doing is to work with the National Department of Health to look at a broader strategy to ensure that future changes are more predictable and also aligned to NHI. But just to highlight on this issue, what we're currently focusing on with regard to health is to look at what changes we can make to respond to COVID-19. This is quite important as well. And the recommendation was made that we need to respond to the FFT recommendation. And we do every year as part of Annexure W1 to the Division of Revenue Bill, which is also an annexure to the budget review online. Next slide, which is slide 26. The issue has got to do with unfunded budgets, and we dealt with that issue quite comprehensively also in the chapter 6 of the 2020 budget review, which highlights what drastic steps we took to ensure that we reverse the situation. And a lot of municipalities had unfunded budgets, this in-year adjustments to their budgets to make it funded. And this was achieved through withholding or delaying the transfer of the local government equitable share, which was a very effective tool. Then the issue of us consulting on with SOGA, not just during the end of the budget process, but throughout the budget process was made, and we do so on technical level. We've met with them on various task teams, local government equitable share task team, also the local government conditional grant framework meetings. But we also have technical budget forum meetings where technicians meet on a quarterly basis to discuss local government finance matters and also other matters that relate to National Treasury, COCTA and SOGA jointly. And those meetings are actually very fruitful and useful. If we can then go to slide 27. Slide 27, please. Thank you. And this issue has got to do with the district development models. COCTA is responsible for coordinating the pilots, but we're working very closely with COCTA on the district model, particularly as it relates to the metros as well. We will report back to the committee on a regular basis on this issue as well. Thank you. Next slide, which is slide 28, and I'm getting close to being finished. It has to do with a recommendation that we need to support the underinvestment of infrastructure by larger urban municipalities, which has got alternative sources than just conditional grants. And a number of proposals were made by the committee, and I'll just deal with the responses. With regard to the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Amendment Bill, that was published on the 3rd of January 2020. And although we originally gave a deadline of March for people to provide inputs, we received so many inputs that we extended to April. And because of the COVID-19 lockdown, we consider extending even further. But there's a huge interest in this bill, which deals with regularizing the charging of development charges, which will assist municipality with bulk charges related to new developments. We've also, as Stephen indicated, made changes to a conditional grant specifically to deal with project preparation, and even as taking you through that one. And then with regard to capacity building, although there's a number of capacity building grants in the system, although a lot of donors also make money available and other supporters provided, we don't really see the benefit. So we've just recently kick-started the process to review the local government capacity building grant system, and we will also be providing the committee with feedback on a regular basis. These are the end of the recommendations, but I just would like quickly to take the committee through another issue that's quite key at this stage, and that is COVID-19. If we can go to slide 29. And just for the committee's information, what we've already done just by the end of the financial year, and if you keep in mind that the lockdown was introduced just before the end of March, we've done a lot offline to achieve this. We've released already just before the end of March a provincial disaster relief grant of $466 million available to provinces to assist them, and also metros that provide also clinics in those provinces with personal protective equipment, also known as PPE. We've also redirected money through the indirect regional bulk infrastructure grant. It's been on the news also quite a lot, where the National Department has been providing water tanking to areas that is currently not having access to water, and that has been quite successful. Of course, much more can still be done. And then we've also made changes for grants that's already been transferred but not yet committed in the Urban Settlements Development Grant, because the municipal financial year only ends in June, so that money is still available to redirect also towards COVID initiatives in informal settlements and vulnerable communities. Another adjustment that we've allowed for, and just keep on slide 29 please, is also to allow that departments resubmit to the national departments grant business plans for them to realign the activities to respond to COVID-19. So quite a bit is, in that regard, is also available, $1.4 billion for them grant to do that. And what would like to then go to then is the next slide. Slide 30. Okay, why is this slide important? Because what the committee approved is the top column, which refers to the division of revenue-based schedules and clauses and the schedule that's contained in the allocations, which is then up to Schedule 7. And this is what the committee approves and becomes the Division of Revenue Act. What falls away but remains on National Treasury's website is all the detail that explains how the allocations are determined and the formulas and all that. That falls away. And then the conditional grant frameworks get legal effect not through the Act, but through a gazette that's published after the Division of Revenue Bill becomes an Act, which must be done within 14 working days, and that is done in terms of Section 16.1 of the committee. If we can go to the next slide, which is slide 31, and that's my last slide. What we then asked the committee, when we picked up, which we've done in the past, a small technical change that we asked the committee to give us approval. So what we then asked the committee to consider is there's small technical errors to be made, that the committee makes a recommendation to give us approval that we can make those changes to the conditional grant framework, so that when the Minister of Finance does the gazette, we make those changes. So we ask you for COVID-19 to do the same, to allow for us to work with the national departments concerned to determine what additional provisions must be added to the conditional grants framework to enable them to better respond to COVID-19. And we are still working with them. So we're asking the committee's approval to provide for a recommendation that allows us to make minor changes to the conditional grant framework, and it must be specifically then linked to COVID-19 initiatives. And thank you very much. I'm done with that part. The National Treasury is also done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Wendy. Thank you, Treasury. Honorable members, I was of the view that we allow the other two presentations, and then when we come to questions, we deal with the all three presentations. Can I get an indication from the members if they agree, members of the committee?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Thank you.
I agree, Chair.
Thank you.
Fine,
okay.
Chair.
Eunice.
Okay. Fine.
Who's that? Eunice. Thank you. Thank you, Eunice. Thank you, Ntate Mletani. Okay, the next presentation, FSC Financial and Fiscal Commission, Prof. Over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Thank you very much again for this opportunity. Now that yourself and Honourable Eunice Curry and other members have seen, I've got a tie on, I'm going to switch off my camera if you don't mind.
No, I want to see you. Speak to us.
Chairperson, the presentation that we're going to do is going to be covered in the table of all the slides for your consideration, and there's also narrative is going to come to you later today. So I'll do the first 9 slides, and I'll be very quick. John Kruger will do the slides 10 to 25. There will be slides 26 to 36, which I'll do, and then the 37, Prof. Dr. Nluga is going to take us to the end of it. But more importantly, presentation... Sorry,
Prof. Will all these presentations be done within 15 minutes?
Yes, it has to be. It has to be.
Thank you.
I'll be fast trackers.
Before
you start, Prof, I'd like to check if the presentation is visible on the screen.
Yeah, it's visible, but okay, members will also use their badges. Thank you.
Sorry, okay. So, the slides will come in 3 areas, basically. The human, health, social, economic crisis development and growth in South Africa and the importance of having an agile and capable state. We will then look at the vertical and horizontal division of financial resources and also what the bill is saying. But with that, we will also look at the key spending functions, in particular at national level, province, and where it came to municipalities. We also then reflect on the emergency regulations, in particular just mentioning the potential of these regulations having consequences on provinces and municipalities. We're not raising the matter in relation to unfunded mandates, but we will need to see exactly what is the stimulus package that the President has announced over the last couple of weeks, and in particular last night, relative to what the Division of Revenue is recommending. But it's quite tough in terms of where we are to deal with that. I'm going to skip the slide on what the role of the FFC is. I think honorable members know that. Can we go to slide 5, please?
Lubabalu 5.
The importance of slide 5 is confirming what the Treasury has been saying in terms of the growth of GDP. But what is very important is that what the OECD and the IMF is saying is this drop in the growth in China, GDP growth in China, South Africa's growth is going to drop to 0.2%. It's an important measure because it will reduce our growth to 0.2 percentage points. Can you go to the other slides? They also give other scenarios from private sector institutions, how they see the GDP growth. And I'm tabling that for your for information to the committee. Go to slide 8, please. So, can I carry on, Chair, because I'm worried about the time also, whatever, the slowness of the slide.
No, don't worry. Just go on. We will follow you, and we have our own presentations on our gadgets.
Okay. You so, Chair, what we're saying to confirm the submission by the creator of slow growth, lack of growth, the COVID implications of it, and the implications for the health, social development, and also the economy. We're saying that there's on the recovery path, and it's a good thing that the president spoke about this. So what we were saying is that there needs to be careful consideration of the adjustments that needs to be carried up by South Africa at the bottom of the income distribution. We need to take care of the social impact, in particular looking at the constitution, the resulting property rights and tax system, and there's a need for restructuring towards greater solidarity in that space. We are of the view that the focus cannot only be on the risk of global shifts and the need to consolidate, but also on opportunities. So there's a need to look at technological change and what are the disruptions it brings in terms of social, political, and economic life and facets of African society. There's a need to, the president spoke about the restructuring of the economy, so I will not speak about that. But more importantly, given who the members are of this meeting today, there's a need to look at the reorganization and the capacitation of the state at all three levels. And in particular, we're talking here about the capable and efficient states. The need to look at factors behind, the next slide. We need to look at factors behind policy uncertainty and weak implementation. That is a concern. There's policy uncertainty because of conflict of interest and inequality we have raised. But your committee previously, the ETOLS is a classic example of design. There's also the contested question about who will lose out in terms of changes, and as a result, the changes get blocked either legislatively to politically, and we have to deal with purposefully with those conflicts and work toward cooperation. So that we find ways of looking at what are the structural and functional facilitators and impediments to cohesion and respect for the rule of law within the country. Chair, with that, I'm handing over to John Kruger to take you through to slide 25.
Thank you, John. You can go on.
Thank you and good morning, Chair and members. So the slides that I deal with say something briefly about the technical changes. So I'm on slide 11. So in terms of the technical changes, the Treasury has gone through them in detail, and I think the short of it here is that the FSC supports these technical changes. We think they do contribute to flexibility and administration.
Honorable members. Wena o bolelang le batho ka mo bafanela eja to kgopela go ntume phone ya gago. We are not interested in the conversation and distractions. Please switch off your mics. Thank you. Continue, Grandmama.
Thank you, Chair. So on the technical changes, the FSC supports work. Those that we think they contribute to administrative flexibility and accountability. I think then the next thing that we'll present is basically different perspectives on the shifts in the February budget and how it deals with these difficult situation we're in. So on page 12, there are three ways of looking at these changes that are proposed in the budget. Firstly, what we spend on, secondly, who spends it, and thirdly,
really in terms of the baseline changes. Here we've got a picture of what we spend on. So it's a picture the members would know that learning and culture takes the biggest part of our budget, followed by social development and health. But members will also see right on the right-hand side, we've got the debt service cost between 2016 and 17, and that's increasing and overtaking everything is now also overtaken the health budget, or it's expected that it will overtake the health budget by 22-23. So that's this. We do spend on the important things, we think in the right proportions, but the debt service cost are upsetting things a bit. The next slide then just shows not the absolute amount that we spend, but how the amounts are being spent. So for example, on the left-hand side, learning and culture on this slide, it showed that over the previous 3 years, expenditure grew by 4.6% in real terms. So that's above inflation. It grew by 4.6%. That was the effect of higher education mostly. And it shows then that going forward the next 3 years, that turns around. That budget declines by 0.5%. So we see quite a difference. Yeah, it again, right on the right-hand side, shows how rapidly debt service cost is rising, but it then shows where the blue lines were significant on the left, learning and culture, health and social development, the expenditure growth declines, and in the budget then, the Treasury tries to push, or the government tries to push community development and economic development, and significant pressure on decent security, and also general public services. So that's just the major change that we see in what we spend in. Also, we can go to slide 17. Slide 17 talks about what we spend in terms of the things we buy. So it talks about current payments, transfers and subsidies, and capital assets. So the rightmost column shows the change going forward, and it shows that government is trying to reduce compensation spending. So a decline of 1.2% per year planned, also putting the limit, the cap on goods and services, and trying to spend more, especially on capital assets, infrastructure, third from the bottom, and the average annual change that we're planned for there is 4.6%. So in addition to the shift in what we spend on in terms of the functional groups, there's also an attempt in the budget to push the spending towards capital expenditure away from compensation expenditure. And the second issue, as I said, is not what we spend on, who we'll spend on, and there I'm going to slide 18, or who will do the spending, if we can go to slide 18. So that's just the summary of the slide that Treasury showed us, and it all shows that in 2021, of the 1.5 trillion available, national gets about 757 billion, provinces 649 billion, and local government 132.5 billion. And one should remember that local government also has got significant own revenue. So that's who will actually be spending the money, what they get to spend. The next slide tells, if we could go to slide 19. So the next slide just shows that in proportions, the previous slide in proportions. So we see here that in 1920, national spent 51.1%. That share goes down to 49.2%, and that 50.1% was a bit of a blip as a result of spending on SOEs. So the plan was going forward, national share will decline and the share of the provinces will increase. So strong slide 19, provincial share increasing from 41.5% to 43.5% over the NTF, and the local government share from 8.5% to 9%. I think so that is how the different spheres are being balanced. The last question that I will really deal with, so we see what happens to the shares, but in terms of real money available to spend, how would people's situation change? And there I'm on slide 20. And slide 20 then shows also what the previous one showed, that in real terms, national spending sort of spiked in 2019-20. partly because of SMEs and also because of debt, but will then become negative going forward. So national spending will decline in real terms over the next 3 years, according to the proposals of government. The local provincial share, if you see the two lines in the middle close to each other, local government spending will grow by about 2% in real terms going forward. So people talk a lot about budget cuts and things. Local government budgets, or at least the contribution from national government, is not being cut. Some of the grants decline in real terms. Overall, local government will get 2% more a year going forward. And also provinces will get more going forward in real terms, about 1.5%. Now, that's not glory days because costs increase. We know that salary costs have been increasing faster than inflation. And there's also the... Shall I continue, ma'am?
You have frozen for 2 seconds. Can you... Yeah, you can continue.
We are not seeing the slides.
We're reading on the presentations.
The slides are not the slides.
With the network now.
Can we see the slides?
Can you continue?
Slides.
Okay, so the basic point is that...
Can you bring back the slides? Please, are you?
Yes, the Jefferson is on the slide. Is it visible?
The presenter can indicate that.
Yeah, we're not seeing it at the moment.
Not yet. I'm sorry about that, John. No, we don't see it.
Okay. I said people can use their other gadgets to connect to
it. Apologies, honorable members and their colleagues. Technology.
Yeah,
that's what I said, and it looked like members, other members, they still want to say it.
Yeah, the basic point there is the right-hand part of
Hello,
the slide
John?
Going... Yes, I can hear you. Can I speak?
Yes, you are audible, John.
Okay, so going forward over the next 3 years, the national... funds going down, and provincial and local still growing in real terms, but there are real pressures because of cost and demand increases. Slide 21 just shows the numbers, the growth rates behind the previous table. So if members look in the real right-hand column, the average annual real growth over the next 3 years for national, provinces and local. So the basic picture is that national departmental allocations decline over the next 3 years. Conditional grants to local government also decline, a negative 2.1%. But overall provinces and local governments still get an increase in real terms. So I think those are just then the two pictures about, you know, what we're spending on and who gets the money. The last thing is the baseline changes, and there we can perhaps go to slide 24 to summarize it very briefly. So this is from Treasury's annexure. So this now just doesn't say how much money exactly is available. It just says how we changed the previous year's budget. So there had to be an addition to national departments to the baseline in 2021, and the provincial and local government baselines reduced. So that's mostly on the conditional grant baselines. And then for 21-22, the share of all three had to be reduced. Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you. Thank you. I think we are going back to Prof. Akay.
Yes, thank you,
Chair. That's part
Chairperson.
Of the presentation.
Can you go to slide 26, please? We're doing very well on time, so I want to suggest that we just stand still on each slide. There's 9 slides here that I want to show. That this slide effectively shows the
allocation in terms of the MTF 2020. It gives you a sense of what was the say allocation to each province, and what was the rate conditional grant allocation. And you'll see that the differences that appears, if you deduct what was communicated in the 2019 MTF. So what you see there is a budget allocation of, for instance, in the Eastern Cape of 71.4 billion, measured against 71.4 measured against 72.7 billion, and you'll see a difference there in the equitable share allocation. And the same you'll see on the conditional, where there's a 12.4 billion allocation, consolidated conditional grant, and then in 2019 it was budgeted for 12.2, and that's the difference that you will see. And then the same follows through in the, on the outer year, which is 21.2. So Jack, can I, we then just go through the list of the members and just see the fees they then? Because the main story here around the equitable share is that the main story of the equitable share, Rubala, can you go to Eastern Cape?
This is the free state.
Yeah. So if Rubala can spend at least 1 minute on each slide, I'm just going to talk around the story because I've explained exactly what's happening in each slide. So on the equitable share allocation, the storyline that cuts across, the effect of the lower estimates of consumer price index inflation on projected compensation spending have allowed a further reduction of 2.5 billion in 2021 and 2.7 billion in 2021-22 from the provincial equitable share. What is important is that there are additions in the provincial equitable share across the provinces for sanitary dignity, in terms of the sanitary dignity program, employing social workers in areas with high levels of gender-based violence, substance abuse, and social problems affecting children. Not-profit organizations support in implementing social behavior change programs to address social and structural drivers of HIV, TB, and sexually transmitted infections. I was suggesting as I speak, you go on to every province, please. The story is not immune to the Free State. So you can show how Teng and the following provinces continuously. Please.
I'm showing Limpopo now, Prof.
Okay,
not yet. Free State. It's coming. We're still on Free State. It's fine. You can speak, Prof. It's still coming. It's coming.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the story that cuts across all the conditional grants, chairperson and members, is that reduction to conditional grants made as part of the fiscal consolidation, which is unshifted from direct ILEMA, let's say, grant to the National Food and Nutrition Survey, which is key on the health question, the contracting of health professionals to implement national health insurance, from direct grant to being funded from the direct National Health Insurance Bureau of Provinces. We see funds for the completion of a project in Limpopo have been shifted from indirect grant to the direct health facility revitalization grant. But also picking up through the assessment of the conditional grants is that funds were added to early childhood development grant to increase the subsidy paid for children receiving early childhood development services and to provide for additional children to access these services. There's also a reprioritization from the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Grant to national to support animal and plant health. There's also the issue about human development on reprioritized to address pollution in the Vaal River system. And lastly on the grant is that provincial road maintenance grant has been reduced to fund disaster recovery projects. So the shift is inside the allocation that allocation transfers to provinces, especially with regard to equitable share and grants. Can we move beyond that? So that brings me to can you go to the slide? Right, I spoke about that. Next slide.
I'm on the slide that shows changes to provincial allocation, Prof.
I just spoke to it. It's done. You can go to the next one. I just wanted to show
you Mpumalanga. We have jumped to Mpumalanga and other provinces. Maybe there we'll talk about it.
No, I haven't jumped. What I was suggesting, Chair, is that all the nine provinces, the storyline that I was telling affects all the nine provinces. But I think what you could probably tell quickly is Mpumalanga. Just a minute. So you can see the line around the equitable share allocation and also the conditional grants and where the shifts are and where the reductions are because of the reasons I've just raised. So the pink indicates to you the reductions, and then you'll see where it's not an element of winners and losers, but it's also showing where the prices are spending and revenue. So what was thought through a tax fiscal program where there had to be cuts to create fiscal consolidation. Mpumalanga, next one.
I'm on Northern Cape now, Prof.
The storyline is the same. That's the point I'm making. The storyline is the same because of the slow growth, lack of fiscal resources, the pressures in spending, public spending, and how the cabinet has decided to shift funds around, cut costs out of criminal costs from other programs. But this is the net effect in terms of 2021 and what has been seen as projected for 2021-22.
Okay.
And then it's difficult to speak about these things in the way that we want to talk about it because of the fiscal package that the president has announced. So one way of what are the interdependencies between these programs and these cuts and where there's an add-on in relation to the package.
Okay.
Okay. Next slide. So we've covered that.
What?
That's just what we've covered. Go on.
Yes, I've covered.
Go on, please. Go on. Go to the slide. There you go. 36 million by 1 and 17. Thank you. Chairperson, what we're showing in this slide is the transfers per person to provinces, and it's actually based on a consolidated amount of the provincial equitable share allocation and the conditional grants allocation. And it just shows you, based on stats, mid-year stats data, South Africa data, the distribution of what ought to be a cycle per capita investment that the state is doing on each individual within every province. So you can see it goes from a high of of 14.1 to 14. In Northern Cape is quite high, you can see there. And then obviously the Eastern Cape, followed by the Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, so you'll see that allocations to the Western Cape and to Gauteng is relatively lower. But there are multiple reasons for it. It's partly historic, it's partly population, it's partly infrastructure development in these areas, but partly got to do with measures around poverty and the numbers of the population in those problems. Okay?
Okay, Paul, is this the end of your presentation?
Yeah, Dr. Nube is going to take us to the last 5 slides to the end, Chair.
Okay. What is the number of the slide that is going to start on? What is the number?
That's 7,
Chair. Provincial grant analysis
slide 37. Slide 37, Chair President.
Dr. Mobe?
Morning, I'm Benjamin.
Good morning. Is it morning? Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, provincial grant analysis changes.
Yes, I'm starting on provincial grant analysis changes.
Okay, thank you.
This is simply a summary of what we have been talking about the baseline changes in some of the grants and what was happening within these individual grants. We selected a few grants to show you what is happening. First, we have the education grant. There we have the education infrastructure grant, the direct part. You see that it has been reduced by 1.9 billion. And the school infrastructure grant also has been reduced. School infrastructure backlog direct part has been reduced by 123 million. On this one, the commission is very concerned about these reductions in baseline because these grants address important infrastructure related challenges within the education sector. Then we go to housing grants. We see also that 544 million has been reinvested from the human settlement grants to upgrade settlements in the mining areas. The commission supports this particular initiative, considering that areas surrounding the mining areas lack basic services and they need to be supported. On the social housing grants or social development grants, we see an addition of 1.4 billion to the early childhood development grant. This is a welcome development as additional resources would expand access to ECD, including basic infrastructure area. Then we also looked at the health grants. We see the shift of 199 million and 5.7 million from the NHI indirect component to the health facility revitalization grant. The commission welcomes this particular change as it is in line with its previous recommendations of streamlining this commission. We move to slide 38. Slide 38 summarizes the baseline adjustment in the provincial PF. Those are the changes in different grants, the reductions in different grants in the province. I'm not going to go through each one of them, but it's a picture which summarizes what has been happening. Then the next slide also summarizes the adjustments in the local government sphere. This one divides the conditional grants into infrastructure grants and capacity building grants. We can see that the adjustments or the baseline cuts were falling disproportionately on infrastructure grants compared to capacity building grants. But it gives a picture there of which grants were more affected by these adjustments, like the USDG, the Public Transport Network grant. Those are the grants which were affected mainly by these adjustments. Then the next slide 40, we look at the implications of the COVID-19 pandemic on the division of revenue. So the next slide will be looking at that. We have seen that under the Disaster Management Act, there were a number of regulations. And what are the implications of these regulations to the division of revenue? We see that resources are released from different institutions despite the pandemic, and they have implications on local government expenditures, revenues, as well as on provincial expenditures and revenues. If we look, for example, some of the regulations which have some implications, we select a few, like placing some people on quarantine and isolation, the emergency procurement, the lockdown, which has some effect on revenue. Municipalities are no longer generating as much revenues because some people are not paying rent, their services, the evictions, homeless people, temporary shelters are affecting the expenditures of municipalities, and the provision of key services, essential services, electricity, water, to communities which were not previously provided is affecting the division of revenue. We move on to slide 41, which continues the same storyline about some of these regulations and directives. For example, the provision of water and sanitation to ensure availability, it has some implications on the division of revenue. Issues around communication in municipalities and campaigns.
Slide 41.
To fight the pandemic affecting the division of revenue, there are areas like in we are on slide 41.
Yes.
Yeah, there are directives or regulations around waste management. They are also affecting the division of revenue.
I'm still on slide 41.
So municipalities are affected as well by hotspot identifications, formation of response teams, information sharing and protocols. All these things are affecting their revenues or expenditures. Then we also have monitoring and enforcement issues of social distancing in communities. These are not causes, but also they have some expenditure implications on municipalities and provinces. Then we also, on slide 42, we continue the same storyline, but we look at some of the responses. Municipal operations and governance, the prioritization of budgets for COVID, and some municipalities may submit revised budgets by end of May. And we also see some changes in institutional arrangements to fight the pandemic, like the establishment of provincial and municipal command councils, the coordination of structures, monitoring, reporting weekly, and development of risk profiles and response plans. All these have expenditure implications on the local government and provinces. So overall, all these regulations have some division of revenue implications to sub-national governments as well as national governments. Then on slide 43, we also note of the activities which are impacting on provinces and municipalities, especially in the area of health. Provinces are affected. Their finances are affected in a big way. In the local government sector, we also see new additional activities. We have mentioned the quarantine of individuals, communication, planning, monitoring, and extending key services to many households. This is affecting the expenditures or even revenues of municipalities. The disruption in informal food markets, emerging blood.
Sorry to interrupt, Chairperson. Lobabalo, can you move the slides so that we are able to follow?
Yes, I'm on slide.
It's breaking up.
Doctor, on this slide, are you?
I lost you for a while, joke there, because you were breaking up. I'm on slide 43 now.
Yes, I'm it's also on slide 43.
It's fine.
Okay, I'm sure. Okay.
I'm also on slide 43 now.
Okay.
Whereby I was talking about. On provinces and municipalities, and I have also mentioned that in the local government here, we see changes in expenditures as a result of quarantine, communication plans, monitoring and extending the e-service to communities. So these are actually changing the expenditure pattern in the local government as well as in provinces. Then we move to slide 44.
Okay, 44.
The conclusion, whereby FFC notes that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified or it has amplified the challenges which are faced by government since the federal budget statement. So it has actually changed the landscape, in terms of fiscal landscape, in a big way. We see that from a slowdown in economic growth which we're experiencing and the shift in unemployment, COVID-19 pandemic has added another dimension to these challenges which the economy was actually facing. So in order to deal with this additional expenditure needs, especially health, essential services and supporting households, expenditures would have to increase while revenues in certain ways are going to decline. We see that some households, it's difficult for them to pay their rent, and so municipalities are affected. So also the deficit and the debt will have to increase. The budget and division of revenue was the sound response to the situation as it was in February. And although stabilization of the deficit and debt required downward baseline adjustment to key infrastructure grants, some changes have to be made since the federal budget statement. And in slide, the next slide,
continuation of our conclusion, 45.
Yes, 45.
Yes, sir.
Why should the FFC support the poverty? Yeah, on slide 44, we say that the FFC supports the overall trust, the budget, and the division of revenue bill. There are some issues which the commission wishes to raise. First, it is whether society not arrive at a mechanism for stabilization, which is more fair and less polarizing than the wage restraint, especially for the workers to secure our future, like teachers, nurses, police, prosecutors, or social workers. So the issue there, could we arrive at a stabilization mechanism which is rather fair and let's summarize that the weight of the trend or the strength. Then secondly, while tax increases were not considered in the February budget to balance the books, the COVID pandemic has seriously changed the situation, and it has highlighted the issue of inequality in our society. So it has actually prompted proposals around a solidarity tax. So a more general strategy around incomes, prices, and access to social services might also be necessary. And the comprehensive of initiatives around structural adjustments also needs a more focused approach and approaches which are credible, which can be implemented, which are implementable. The next slide, the last slide there is simple saying that the FSC confirms that given the circumstances since the February budget and the levels of economic growth as we have seen in our initial slides, which are projected to decline, the rating downgrades which we have seen and increasing fiscal constraints as well as the COVID implications of financial resources, the Commission recommends two issues that the Select Committee should consider approving the division of revenue, and secondly, that the committee should consider and not the emergency interventions and measures may have implications on the fiscal position of all the districts, especially on the spending and revenue of the 3 years of government. And with that transition, we end.
Doctor? Prof, your presentation was too long. You have eaten more than what you were expected to eat. Honorable members, there are still members who have their mics on. Can we please mute the mics? They might have unmuted themselves mistakenly. Please mute your mics. And those members who want to interject or want to make an order, can you please go to the chat? There is someone who's overseeing the chat. She will indicate to me that there's someone who wants to speak. Please, I beg of you. And the sounds, the background sounds are really disturbing. Our meeting is live. And people are complaining that we are not, we don't seem to be observing or doing what we have agreed upon. The golden rule of muting the mic. TBO, I hope you are going to lead by example. We have been given a time allocation that our meetings should not be prolonged because we are spending data. Other resources here. You hear? Somebody is now speaking. There's a conversation going on. There's a conversation going on. Members, please mute first. Just check your mics are unmuted. PBO, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members. Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon, colleagues. Thank you so much for the opportunity for Parliamentary Budget Office to bring the extended appropriations committee under these lot of uncertainties around the societies and the economy and so on. So I think we will try to give the call. We've got only 13 slides, and we'll try to cover specific issues and not emphasize a lot on what has been said by colleagues from the other side. My name is Mr. Danji. My colleague, Lady Orlandi, I think it was the minister. Lady Orlandi and Siraj Muhammad, they'll all be helping in this. I think myself and maybe I will do the presentation and Siraj will come in later in the question time. Our presentation, like I said, just a few slides, just try run through some of the key issues, key messages that I'm sending out to committees and other members. Chair, I just thought quickly the benefit of other honorable members in the processes of quickly indicate who could go east, because we have not worked a lot with some of the committees or members in the provinces. Budget office is the parliament entity which is the first to support parliament in approving, in dealing with the budgets and related matters in the state. And this presentation is part of our work that we do in supporting the legislature. We certainly I want to assist members in also ensuring the consistency between the fiscal framework in February, proposed February approved last in March, and also try to highlight some of the previously level of less obligation and priorities that would have implications from the budget of health implications going forward. Then I'm just using my as well, I can see the slides slowly. I mean, giving a background, Chair and honourable members, would like to highlight the impact that Chris highlighted earlier, that the COVID-19 has certainly highlighted the public health danger associated with the level of funding and quality of funding across the provinces, and also within the poorer households. And it's very important to take these issues into account in the discussion, how to build a more protective layers going forward for low-income households in the system. Of course, the 2020 division of revenue differs with what it was in the state in 2019, largely because of some changes that we have made, more than expected growth, also the fact that there have been pressures that are coming from the SOEs, which necessitated reduction in the baseline. But of course, in the reduction, the provinces and provincial and the local governments, equitable share, as I just mentioned, have continued to go over the inflation thereof. And that's because, as Chris was saying, largely the reductions were taken from the provincial grants, the provinces and local sphere itself. I think the message I'm trying to put out of this is it's unclear and quite growth in opportunity in terms of how the budget allocations, how youth housing will affect society. And it's quite difficult to determine that, Chair, and on our members. And a lot of you emphasize that the comments request the regular updates in terms of how has the reduction in baseline, most the commercial grant affected the services around us and that the drive over the time. Also, focusing largely on the local government commercial grants, we've seen that infrastructure and capacity building has been the biggest hit in reduction, the baseline and the collection of policy. So, ironically, okay. And honourable members, what is
please pardon me, Dimisani. Honorable Pala, can you mute your mic or Lubabalo, if you are able, just mute that mic, please, for Honorable Pala. Thank you. Continue. Friends and members for letting me.
All right. Well, we're saying, ironically, over the years, we've seen that Office of the OCHA Chamber have repeatedly identified poor infrastructure, lack of human capacity as a form of challenge faced by local governments in delivering services. And therefore, emphasize the importance of making sure that if there are these deductions or if there are these taking our money from one person to another, how do we make sure that delivery does not get impacted? And importantly, asking or requiring the government to actually provide those implications for another things or what are the expectations that infrastructure and capacity building would have on local government, particularly after seeing what it is so much concerned in terms of how much the low income households are but of course what we emphasize is that the committee says that government provides of these reductions. And what we have been doing also, many of us are doing this now,
with five start looking at assessing the social grant schedules as they are passed to the Commission of Revenue, and I want to start that the Commission of Grant system don't necessarily provide sufficient information for oversight, and it's therefore important to make sure that even the point of even with the Commission of Grant, there's a particular outcome that wants to be achieved. And at the level of legislator, when we, look at the outcomes, we need to, a lot of times, focus on the objective of business development, as opposed to just focusing on financial poverty. And of course, in the context that you're saying earlier on, that we are in a certain terrain, and we've heard the president last night trying to indicate that there will be some relocation, and business delivery or low-income households will make this taking into account. And that's coming to that. What we have done, Chair and other members, as part of the next slide, as part of our next slide, okay, as part of our analysis test, we went around and looked at what has been some of the changes in production households that were brought about by the budget for the year. We tried to say, look, how do we see these changes or these what has been happening in households to use as a lens to see the budget and how can that improve to ensure better budget in that. What we've done, we looked at the recent surveys, household surveys, it's shown that over the years that South African households have made quite over the years and we see that changes are taking place. However, we've seen also that there has been a huge growth in households, which also has the growth in population, which in a way, if households grow, it is more demand for services opposed to because of individual kind of population in that regard. So there is certainly a quite strong growth of need of services. And I, when we look at the budget, it's important as far as to look at how we amortized within the budget in itself. Another movement over the years, over the household, we've seen the increase in or improvement in education attendance across provinces, but we have not seen the outcome keeping pace with improvement. And another point there is on early childhood development. We have seen, I saw the college emphasize how much we shall fund it. Very important because the household savings shows that the grant is so much about 40% of child between 0 and 4 years have access to sufficiency, which is the rest of the across services, the rest of the early child development doesn't cover the household that we about 2% of learners attend Northeast School. About 9 in 10 learners benefit from government nutrition program. Across provinces, we've seen how much social grants remain a significant safety net of households, most of provinces. Whatever changes we have, this needs to be taken into account. How do we enhance that as opposed to that? And therefore, we say government will have as much more to do in terms of providing capacity for services through the budget and also to improve quality of services. And even unless there are huge unexpected large issues in human service delivery or a huge volume of service infrastructure and human service development, but increasing budgets by inflation or any inflation growth would not be enough for the meantime to keep out the challenges that are faced by the community. Moving on we just also try to show the example based on the household savings that out of all households, 19% of households are still developing informal settlements, which means they have limited in terms of public services. And we see during the lockdown that more of these households have been heavily affected by the level of services. healthcare facilities or stores and so on. And this position also takes into account quite significantly. About 54% of households less tap or pipe water in the household and the use of sanitation facilities which is very in the most areas or for our colleagues in that. So I'll give Maria to continue for me. Thanks so much. Maria?
Okay, thank you.
Maria?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will start with slide 9. When you look at slide 9 at the bottom, you can see the changes since 2019 budget to the shares of the Division of Revenue. It was estimated in 2019 that the national departments received 48%, provinces 43%, and local government only 9%. But due to the pressures from the state-owned companies, as well as the low economic growth, the Treasury had to reduce some of the budgets. Most of the decreases were in provinces. You can see there was a decrease of 7.9 billion. Local government was decreased by 5.4 billion. And then the national department received an additional 24.6 billion. This actually caused a change in the division of revenue. When you go to the bottom again, you can see the change is now the national department receives 49.2%, provinces 49.2%, provinces 42.2%, and local government 8.6% as a result of the adjustments to the baseline. Next slide. This slide just shows the division of revenue in terms of the percentage share of non-interest allocations, and then we've broken it down further on the left-hand side. So you can see on the left-hand side the provincial share of 42.7%, the direct and indirect grants forms 17.6% of that share, and the share amounts to 82.4%. On the local government share, the 9.2% of the national revenue that they receive is split into 53.3% for local government, and the direct and indirect grants amounts to 36.7%. Next slide. So these shares actually also illustrate the importance of conditional grant funding to ensure the implementation of national policy priority. But as part of government's effort to limit growth in government expenditure and also to ensure sustainable public debt, most conditional grants have been reduced. So you can see in the table the total reduction in the 2020-21 budget baseline was 28 billion, of which program-specific reductions is at 10.7 billion, or 37.8%. Provincial conditional grant actually was decreased by 4.9 billion, which is 17.3% of the total reductions, and the local government conditional grants are decreased by 4.6 billion, which is 16.4% of the total reduction in conditional grants. Next slide. So the baseline reductions take into account, amongst others, as well as National Treasury indicated, it takes into account past spending and performance, but we also don't know whether that is actual outputs or the impact performance, or there's also just performance on spending. Where possible, the National Treasury has reduced transfers that consider more likely to go unspent or spent less effectively. So in terms of the effective and efficient spending of the conditional grants, the PBO, we started a series of assessments of the grant schedules, and we acknowledge that there are also business plans on grants and that the schedules are not part of the division of revenue, but it's just an addition to the revenue. But that is the only information that is available to us. So when we look at the information, we did an assessment. We started with education and health. Preliminary outputs or the findings on the education and health conditional grants was actually that it only provides information on outputs achieved. It do not provide impact indicators, which makes it difficult for oversight bodies in specific parliaments to determine the effectiveness of the spending. In the schedules, there are also a gap. When you receive the schedules for 2020, the outputs for 2018 is only available. So there's a two-year gap in the information that we receive. And most of the conditional grants do not provide targets for the outputs in the schedules. So what we are saying in terms of our findings is that it is so important for committees in Parliament to be able to determine efficiency and effectiveness that we need to get proper data in terms of the spending on conditional grants, and we also would see more regular reporting on the non-financial performance on the associated with the expenditure, because currently we only receive regular information on expenditure, but we do not find or receive proper information on non-financial information. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. That's the end of the presentation from PB owner.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for all the presentations. I have members who have indicated through our chat icon that they want to speak. The first member who has indicated that he wants, we are going to question session now, will still be using the chat icon. I have Honorable Motswana Motswana, MPL. Can Honorable Motswana, are you still in the meeting? You can speak?
Yes, Chair.
Okay.
Yes, Chair, am I audible?
Okay. Yes, you are. Very much so.
Yes, I'm the Chair of the Finance Committee from the Northwest Province. My issue, Chair, is that whilst we acknowledge that due to the pandemic, of the COVID-19, the budget has taken a knock. My concern is that the province of the Northwest has previously received or get recognition for drought relief, but I don't recall the province ever getting that particular money for the relief. Maybe provincial treasurer, national treasury can clarify that particular issue. The second issue that I had a concern whilst I was going through the slides and preparing for the meeting was how are we going to necessarily ensure that municipalities and provincial government are going to be spending money in terms of what is required in terms of diversion of COVID-19 and not necessarily use unfunded mandate as an excuse, so that we don't encounter a situation where we make a room for spending on unfunded mandates, but then we then have a situation where people go on a blatant spending spree, which would not necessarily address the needs of our people on the ground. Already you have a situation where tanks are being procured to mitigate against issues of water in various municipalities. But there would be no necessity of buying tanks if we don't have aquifers where we can get water to deliver to our people. So it will just be buying tanks for business sake. Those tanks will just be sitting there, but would not necessarily address the needs of our people. Those are just but two concerns that I just wanted to pass through.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Mackenzie, I think it's Mackenzie from Western Cape. Honorable Mackenzie?
Yes, can you hear me? I'm here. Can you hear me,
yes.
Chairperson?
Now I can hear you.
Can I proceed?
I can hear you. Yes.
Thank you.
I can see and hear you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Obviously, these presentations were drawn up given the February budget. I appreciate the work the Treasury and the FFC, etc. has done. But given the changes over the last few days, at latest last night, the 500 billion social relief, has the Treasury, the FFC Parliamentary Budget Office, been in discussions, or are they going to be in discussions from today onwards, and with the Minister of Finance, with the Presidency, with the Economic Cluster, in changing what has been proposed in February budget, because these are new policy changes that needs to be implemented, and we are fully behind it, and going forward, and whilst the is asked to approve the Fed budget, going forward, is that not going to become mute because a new emergency budget, and also to Treasury, when is the National Minister of Finance going to table the new emergency budget so these changes can be approved immediately? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Rhoda from Northern Cape.
Chairperson, my concerns that I have is the following. I want to note this concern in terms of the presentation that was made. We had a crisis, a fiscal crisis, prior that severely hindered our ability as provincial government to respond adequately to triple threat approach. When I speak of triple threat, I speak of the COVID-19 pandemic, the ongoing drought we're experiencing within the province, and the consequences of the sovereign credit rating downgrade. Chairperson, prior to the COVID-19 lockdown, one of the major consequences of the downgrade, which will be felt over to the long term in the province, is a loss of South Africa's eligibility to rank on the FTSE World Government Bond Index. Not only has this triggered an outflow of capital, but will also compromise our ability to form mutual beneficial partnerships in future projects, and we will have to sacrifice a great deal of sovereign independence in agreeing on terms with future partners. In effect, our country and our province in particular will be left vulnerable to the vouchers and loan shops of the international finance world, as eligibility to rank on the FTSE World Government Bond Index is a prerequisite for multinational agreements. We need to now plan an aggressive mitigation against that. My other area of concern is the Land Bank default announcement on the 20th of April with regards to the agricultural project worth 20 billion that was agreed with Absa Standard Bank, FNB, as well as Nedbank. While it is not yet known which properties or developments in the province will be affected, it could be relevant to note that 25% of the agricultural debt in the country is carried by the Land Bank. Due to the drought, debt levels in the province are likely to be higher than before, and our agricultural industry could be crippled beyond repair. My third concern that I want to note, and that is directly related to COVID-19, is the triple impact by way of social impact. We seem to be addressing that from a budget perspective fairly adequately, our economic impact, but what I'm concerned about is the health impact. We are focused from a budget perspective in terms of protective gear and. But a fundamental aspect of health is that of mental health. We are not planning for that. Chairperson, over and above the burial regulations, the pastoral and mental health, as it relates to bereavement, there is loss that relates to jobs that has to be dealt with mentally. There is jobs that, there's businesses that are trampling in the red or are going to close their doors. According to SADAG, which is the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, the loss of revenue per year can reach up to 218 billion. We need to plan for that now already. In the slide from the Treasury, slide 25, there seem to be we will look at those issues, but we need to
for them for that now. And then, Chairperson, my last comment and question that I want to raise. On slide 5 of National Treasury presentation on the Division of Revenue, overall shows that greater fiscal burdens has resulted in baseline reductions to the equitable share allocations to provinces, with the expectation that provinces will be able to mitigate against a comparatively smaller reduction through improved efficiency. In light of the pre-existing fiscal crisis in the province, this leads me to the following big urgent question. What kind of efficiency measures are envisaged by National Treasury, and how do these proposed measures differ from the measures which are already laid out in the laws in terms of PFMA? In rand and cent terms, according to the estimates done by National Treasury, what kind of savings can be realized through improved efficiency measures? From the audit outcomes of the Northern Cape as a whole, we've seen that there seems to be a lack of financial maturity or capacity to implement the basic requirements in terms of the law regarding public finance management as it relates to unauthorized expenditure. Chairperson, the recent outcomes also highlight regression in some of the key department's performances. We see no improvement, no greater efficiency, and more importantly, no consequence management. Chairperson, my question is then, what support do we expect from National Treasury over and above that has been implemented, and what will be rolled out so that our position is empowered in terms of oversight, particularly as it relates to reporting and consequence management? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ryder. Honorable Ryder, Dennis.
Right, sorry, Chair. Thank you. Yes, I've got you. Thank you very much, okay. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. I will be as brief as I possibly can. Firstly, just a thank you to Treasury. At our last meeting, we requested a breakdown of allocations in terms of DORA.
We've lost you. What's happening, Lubabalu? Honorable Ryder?
Yes,
Honorable
I was Ryder. Muted, Chair. Thank you, Lubabalu. Don't mute me again. Thank you, Chair. Treasury sent us a link for the breakdown for DORA per municipality. I have that in the comments box. Certainly it'll be useful for all the people in the different provinces. That's my first point. Secondly, there's obviously an elephant in the room. The announcements made, particularly last night's, will have sweeping changes to the budget. So the details that we have here before us is fairly moot. I presume that understanding that this is kind of being made up as we go along and understanding that many provinces require the DORA approval to release funding for them so that they can start spending money, and we're going to rely heavily on provinces for the fight against COVID-19. I'd like to just hear from Treasury and perhaps also from the FFC two different opinions about whether they feel that we should go ahead, approve this DORA in its current format purely for a procedural thing, to release the funds and make sure that money can flow. Noting, however, that there is a four-month window after the start of the new financial year for the approval of DORA. Perhaps the alternative then is to redo DORA from scratch, taking into account what we know now, especially considering that the President last night announced 130 billion rand in savings from the current budget. Now, that's going to affect DORA dramatically. I'm sure it's going to affect many national departments' projects as well. But until we know where that is coming from, it's going to be difficult to know what can be spent and what can't be spent. So in terms of the Moneyballs Act, I just would like to hear, should we go ahead and approve this DORA as it is, purely for the point of being a little bit of money flowing, or should we rather go back to the drawing board and get this emergency budget out, because frankly, the devil in that detail. The president made his announcements, but the devil is going to be in that detail, and that's going to be incredibly important. Thank you, Chair. I'm done.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mkondo. Honorable Mkondo.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the presenters for the three presentations. I think mine, one, is just to make comments, and I think I will raise one or two questions. And I think the comment I wanted to make, Chair, is to say I think I concur, especially with both FSC and the PBO's presentation around the acknowledgement of, yes, the implications of the COVID-19, you know, and some of the pre-existing, you know, economic woes we had as a country. In particular, if we look now, what is
happening? Sorry, Honorable Mkondo, can you activate your video so that we can
thank you. Can you? Okay, thank you, Chair.
I see someone. I was just, yes.
Thank you, sir. I was just saying I concur with the spirit of both FFC and the PBO presentation about how the implications of COVID-19 have actually pre-exposed once again, you know, the type of economic challenges we have had in the country. And I think that is actually amplified in what is happening in most of our communities and municipalities have to deal with that in terms of adherence to the lockdown. And I'm raising this, Chair, because I would have thought that as we talk about some of the changes, both in terms of the conditional grant, you know, and some in the equitable share, those issues, because we need to really try and be seen to be making, you know, a drastic shift in terms of how, you know, our spending patterns and also how we manage our public resources. And I'm raising this in terms of, one, I'm more interested in the logic, you know, of the urban metro cuts in particular, because as I listen to sort of what is being said as the prima is the assumption made of the kind of capability of investment raising by these urban metros. Now, what I want to understand from Treasure in particular is that if that is the investment sort of perspective that was put in that particular decision, have we also looked at the performance of those municipalities, in particular as it relates to how they respond, you know, to some of the challenges, socio-economic challenges in those municipalities? And if we take two things, Chair, one, the urban migration, in particular in some of the urban metros, and I'm speaking here from the Western Cape, if we talk about city of Cape Town, you know, and the kind of inequality, if we look at the Gini coefficient, that is almost, I think, majority of some of these of the municipalities are at 0.6. So how do we then, you know, when we look at that particular decision, reconcile with such particular realities, you know, in those communities where conditional grants, you know, have not necessarily been realized to actually do the necessary changes, you know, in terms of the social condition of the community. So that's my first issue that I would appreciate if Treasury can just give some understanding. The second one, Chair, is around, you know, as I listen to some of the presentation from Treasury, is the extent to which, you know, our PPP now a response to the participation of civil society structures, you know, in how they assist service delivery. And I think this is an issue I've raised also in our provincial treasury, and I'm always referred to national treasury, that the issue of triple P's, you know, still rests with the national treasury. And I continue with this question, the extent to which, you know, civil society structures and organizations and that particular investment is really tapped into how we're spending, you know, especially now for COVID-19, because in the main, government, you know, relies on most of these NPOs, you know, structure that are there. So one provision, you know, is being made to sort of channel that particular effort that is in our communities. The last one, Chair, is that once again, I think women, we've seen women continue to be affected in the main with the COVID-19. And at what point are we really, you know, ramping up the conversation that has still not been concluded on gender budgeting? So if indeed that particular aspect can just be clarified in the type of changes that have been made, which I think predominantly, you know, I concur with them. But I just need to get clarity on those issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Detroit.
Thank you, Chair. I want to appreciate the presentation. So I've got quite a mouthful, but I'll try to stick to within the three limits. I've been partially covered. With the budget that was presented by Mr. Mboweni, we expressed our concerns about new government's gross borrowing requirements for the 2020 budget that wouldn't stabilize and an estimated 0.5% projected growth in the economy. But the thing that happened in the meantime, we're looking at a growth that's negative about 5.8 or 6.1%. With the same division of revenue, it doesn't make sense. We will have a huge deficit as a result of this. We've emphasized the importance of the budget deficit not exceeding 6.8%. Should we accept the current division of revenue bill as it is and the additional funds government will source in the form of loans, what would the budget deficit then be? We still afford it. Keep in mind that the revenue collection will be very limited as a result of the imploding economy and certain job losses as an effect of the COVID-19 lockdown. We must also keep in mind that the proposed blocking and unblocking of settlements as proposed by Minister Lindiwe Sisulu, there will be an extra burden on municipalities. Funds will be available for those blocking and unblocking, but the municipal area will be a lot larger with more residences to be serviced. So we might sit in a situation where municipalities will have even a less income than they currently have. Honorable Botswana partially covered me on the droughts in Northwest, but it's a countrywide problem, not only in Northwest. I didn't see anywhere in the documents or the presentations where drought was even mentioned as an option, only relief for upcoming farmers. And we must see to it that we've got food security in the country. Also keep in mind that Minister Dlamini Zuma declared and gazetted in end of February, beginning of March, a drought crisis affecting multiple provinces as a national state of disaster. And that must be availed to everyone that applies for it without any restrictions of ethnicity, etc. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Honorable Ngosi from KZN.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Want to appreciate the presentations that were received from the three stakeholders, including National Treasury. There are only two issues that want to raise as KZN. Okay. The first one is that we are still consistent in raising the issue around the question of the poor performance of indirect grants that they need to be done away with. Unless there will be a plan of ensuring that those who are supposed to monitor those indirect grants do so, because history tells us that all of them poorly perform, whether they are coming from the national to the provinces or local government or whatever. This is one thing that wanted to indicate, is the issue that we have carried out from the fifth parliament based on our own analysis. The second thing, I think Wendy can deal with it outside, meeting. We have noted with serious concern as KwaZulu-Natal that three departments of ours have not been allocated the EPWP integrated the grant for provinces, and that the amount involved is not less than 25 million rand. When we ask the departments, they are indicating that they don't know the reasons or they did not inquire. We were expecting that when the NHED team were going to come, but unfortunately, COVID-19 has prevented that. If we could be given the specifics as to why there is zero allocation to the EPWP grant for the Department of Health, as well as Sport and Recreation and Arts and Culture. These are our main concerns. We have been covered around the question of the COVID-19 intervention. We have made a clear call as a finance portfolio committee of the province that this is a business unusual. Therefore, departments must find a way of how to deal with that. Anyway, as a province of KwaZulu-Natal, we have entered the eighth consecutive year when we did not, when we had to deal with the budget cuts, and we have pulled through, and we are confident that guided by the oversight of the legislature, we are going to pull through. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Just a reminder here from my side, if you may please continue to remind members to activate their, to put on their cameras when they speak. Mr. Nkosi forgot to...
Mr. Nkosi, I didn't see him. I just saw him when he introduced himself. Mr. Nkosi, in that closing remark of yours for oversight, I asked to include the permanent members of NCOP because they is their responsibility as well to work jointly with you in the provinces. Thank you so much. It's fine. Honorable John PC, comrade, and welcome. John PC, unmute, just unmute.
Oh, yes.
Can I have?
Thank you so much. I can hear you now. Thank you so much. Chair, I'm covered by a few colleagues around the concerns of the cutting of the budget. But let me start from where Honorable Nkosi left off. I think when we were in Cape Town earlier this year, we spoke about the issues of the grants. And I think I wouldn't advise all of us to go the route of saying, no, we must do away with indirect grant due to poor performance. I think provinces may differ, because in our province, we have a different approach to that. And I think we still need that because we are implementing and using that. And we have called on all the departments that are receiving that amount of money that they must make sure that that is part and parcel of their APPs. And we are monitoring that as a province. But the other issue, Chair, is the implication of the announcement by the President yesterday of the 120 billion as part of dealing with challenges of COVID-19. And I think Treasury as well as FFC may want to respond to that. The challenge is, where is this money going to come from which programs, so that we are able to prepare ourselves to say, from this particular program, this is what is going to happen, from this particular program, and which departments also, where this money is going to be taken from their programs. Maybe if we can get clarity on that. And I want to agree, and I want to also request colleagues that we must agree with those two recommendations from the FFC. I think they will take us forward very, very well, Chair. Lastly, is the issue of the, we know that COVID-19 is going to affect more on the local government. And I want to suggest that maybe Treasury should consider, I could see that because they have cut a lot of other areas, including in the some programs of the local government. If you can focus on that the local government should be actually getting more money to deal with the challenges of COVID. Remember, South Africa was still in the early stages of the COVID-19. We don't know what is going to happen in the next 2 months or so around this particular matter. I think it will be proper that we deal with that. Lastly, Chair, is the issue of mental health. I think there's a colleague who spoke about it. I think we must also prioritize increasing our revenue to the Department of Health so that they can be able to respond positively and strongly against this pandemic of the COVID-19. So that we are able to make sure that the testing and other things, and we have seen that trade union movement having gone out now to say that there's no sufficient safety clothing for the staff members in different hospitals. We know that provinces may differ from one province to the other, but I'm saying because we are on a national platform now, let us look into that, because it is very, very key that health gets at least sufficient amount of money. Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Before I go to the last, but one member.